Hello everyone, your host Brooke Weber here. Thank you for taking your time to listen to Lens Fuzz, a podcast that comments on stories where at one point the fuzz either should have been involved, should not have been involved, which is usually the case, or it's just a little fuzzy. I would like to thank you so much, Michelle, for being here again.
You're welcome, Brooke. Happy to do it.
Everyone, this is our second time recording because Michelle's mic was not on the first time I was recording.
And it was Brooke's fault.
I think my production team was taking a nap.
Who's your production team?
I don't know. I haven't met them yet, but for some reason they've been napping since I started this podcast. And they're always, the one thing they always say is, don't move in the chair. So, sorry about that, Michelle, but, you know, it's just part of the biz when you're in a DIY podcast.
We'll get there.
Speaking of DIY podcasting, if you have ideas for future shows that you'd like to listen to, the only requirement is there has to be some sort of intervention made by the police or criminal justice system that should have happened, should not have happened, or, you know, we can't decide. The funny thing is, though, my mom wrote me an idea to do a story about Rachel Berkheimer.
Ooh, who's that?
Okay, that shows you're not from Everett. So I was just going to ask you if you'd heard of her. And I was like, oh, this is going to be juicy. So when it was like early 2000s, this girl goes missing. Uh-huh. And her face is like all over the news. I should text you a picture of her. But she's like 18-year-old, blonde, pretty, you know, white female.
Right.
So, of course, they're freaking out. And then, anyways, come to find out that she was finally found killed, and it was that is too bad. And her ex killed her along with his gang members. And if you look at the picture of her, she looks like a kind of even, you know, a sporty, athletic, popular girl. And I guess they murdered her because her boyfriend was afraid, or his gang was afraid, she was sharing like gang secrets. And so I was getting into researching this at work when I shouldn't have been, because I'm like, yes, I'm going to talk about this on my podcast, and I'm trying to find like some sort of where the police should have intervened, but there's no way it would actually be on this podcast. It's obviously a true crime story. And my only shock about the whole thing was that there were gangs in Everett that were that ruthless. Not that I'm laughing at the murder, but I was impressed that Everett gangs could do such like brutal things. And Mom, just so you know, this is not a true crime podcast. So after spending an hour researching, hoping I could get a hook in there of like when police should have intervened early, it was really just like when the dad should have realized that his daughter started like doing meth and hanging out with gang members. So
yeah, that's really sad to see someone that young go before their time, but yeah, not relevant for our show essentially.
Well, if there was some sort of matter where there should have been an intervention, but from what I read, it was like, she was a normal girl. Oh, she stopped. Her friend got murdered, or got killed in a car accident she was close to. Then apparently she started hanging out with these gang members in Everett and staying up late and doing meth or something.
Yeah, I can't believe there are gangs in Everett.
Well, there are. And I can, but I didn't think they actually, like, got shit done. I thought they were just, like, hanging out on a corner, eating Cheetos and pretending they were like a Cheeto gang. And
they were like the Jets and the Sharks. Jets because Boeing is in Everett.
Oh yeah. Those would be the best. I can't remember. I think they did have a gang name. But no, this isn't a true crime podcast. I know people listen to like that podcast with the two women talking, but you know, I'm not a murderino. I'm a fuzzino. I'm looking for fuzzinos.
Well, if you have good true podcast recommendations, let us know, because we dig those too. Just listen.
But really, you should just be telling your friends about Fuzz Lens.
Yeah, that's the only podcast.
I still haven't been vetted enough. But now that we have fans in Ontario, British Columbia, Chile, and El Salvador, we're very international.
New York, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah, listeners, we're international.
Washington State.
and DC. I hope we would have some listeners in Washington State. I've got up to 100 listens, but then I was like, maybe this is just Vishal re-listening to our podcast. But luckily, I saw there were other people. Anyways, I digress. So we are going to be talking about police dogs again today, which is a great topic for this podcast since it is debatable if police dogs should be used for every job that they're trained for as like an intervention tool in policing. And I like mentioned this before, but right now, to Vishal at least in our previous recording, but my middle school students are learning about World War One right now, and they were kind of interested in Princip and Franz Ferdinand and all the assassinations. But what really got them interested was today we looked at pictures of the dogs from World War One. That's why I sent you the picture of the Stubby Sergeant. Yeah. Sergeant Stubby from World War One. Apparently they made like a cartoon about him. But yeah, like there, it is pretty interesting. Like they were great rat catchers and messengers for the Allied troops.
Because there were a lot of ditches in World War One, and the rats would be a nuisance to the soldiers, and especially when soldiers were bleeding, and rats would try to eat them alive if they were just like laying there in their own pain and misery. So World War One was a really brutal war because it was fought with more modern weapons but old techniques. So the technology had exceeded the methods, but they're still charging at each other as they used to prior to when they had bayonets instead of guns.
Yeah. That's what I'm learning. I'm just a teacher, but, you know, I have to learn some stuff. So, sorry. Question to you, though. No. You're not mansplaining. but question to you. Do you think that we should blame Germany as well for World War One?
You know, you can blame a lot of people for World War One. Maybe Germany wasn't the country that started World War One. It was the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand from Austria-Hungary Empire by what I believe was Serbian nationalists. So you could blame the Austria-Hungary Empire, but really, I think more than anything, you can blame nationalism.
The reason I'm kind of asking is because, you know, Germany is so militaristic that during that time, they were very gung-ho, it felt like, from what you read about going into war.
Germany was also essentially a much younger country as in terms of being a modern state. It's a much younger country than France or Britain. Or some of the other European countries.
The Kaiser. But anyways, let's talk about police dogs, I guess. I'm sure we could find a way to do a World War One episode in here.
It's interesting how a lot of these dogs come from Germany. Rottweilers, Dobermans, German Shepherds. For some reason, that culture is very interested in breeding things. I wonder if that led to any other kind of wars.
I don't know. I haven't heard of any other wars after World War One that you know, they use pseudoscience or pseudogenetics to determine who's the superior race. Anyway, speaking of history, let's talk about the timeline of when dogs were used. More modern era. You've mentioned before, though, that dogs have been used since like Roman times or medieval times.
We know of dogs being used in wars in ancient Sumeria, where we see artwork there. We know that dogs were used by the Romans. They were used by gladiators. They were used, used in actual war. By the Romans and the Greeks too. So we know that people have been using dogs for a long time. It kind of makes sense that maybe even prior to these civilizations, hunter-gatherers were using dogs when they would have their conflicts.
It's so crazy because I forget that like dogs were around back then with hunter-gatherers.
They were the first domesticated species. And what's really interesting, I think, is wolves, the ancestors of modern dogs, were essentially one of the species that were competing with us for dominance over the landscape. And even as recently as the 1500s, you would have super packs of wolves take over cities in Europe prior to the invention of firearms. That's what really enabled us to kind of human beings to take the power away from them. So wolves are quite smart and quite dominant megafauna as are we. So there's a lot of talk about perhaps, you know, the domestication of dogs, how that happened. There's a lot of debate to that. Most people assume that dogs followed us around and we'd throw scraps to it and they became our little pets.
Yeah.
But there's also theories that we would follow wolves around and when they would kill a prey, we would scavenge from them.
Oh, wow. So, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So really, you know, it could have been where it started out. They started domesticating us. And who knows, you know, we know that we've altered the evolution of dogs, but it's possible that they've altered our evolution as well.
My mind is blown right now. That was some good stuff. So thank you, Vishal. I'm going to talk a little bit about just kind of what I research. And I can't remember where I got this research. I think it was a mix of Wikipedia, awesome source, and another document that I read. But basically, it kind of starts with the modern era, like you talked about, obviously, you know, prior to this. But using police dogs can be traced back to the English, who use bloodhounds, like sense of smell, to try and search for Jack the Ripper, who was the serial killer who killed prostitutes in England during this time. And so the police chief, apparently, he was getting a lot of pressure because he wasn't able to find Jack the Ripper.
Yep.
And so he was asked, you know, like, we need to use bloodhounds to track the killer. Spoiler alert, they never found Jack the Ripper, but they did begin to start using, they did train some bloodhounds for performance of a simple tracking test from the scene. And you know, anyways, the results from this were not satisfactory, with one of the hounds biting the commissioner and both dogs later running off, requiring a police search to find them.
Oh man, they sound like fun dogs.
Yeah, but that's what you probably get when you don't actually take the time to train the dogs properly. So then in the early 1900s, you see many countries starting to use dogs in law enforcement. So in Belgium, police started the formal canine training. In 1910, probably during the war too, Germany regularly used canine units in more than 600 of their largest cities. Labrador retrievers joined London officers on patrol. And then in the late 1970s, the United States started using canine units regularly. And interestingly, though, I think the United Kingdom is one of the only countries that actually gives their dogs that were in law enforcement pension plans when they retire. Wow. So that's really cool. It might be a new thing, but yeah.
We should start doing that with people here.
Oh, yeah, right? You mean...
Wait. Let's get to a national minimum wage, and then maybe we can talk about pensions.
Yeah. You gave your blood, sweat, and tears. You worked for the man 40 hours a week, and you get to try to survive your old age.
You get to work at Walmart.
You get to work at Walmart. Hey. There's nothing wrong with that, right?
But
I'm not a big fan of Walmart, but yeah. So, anyways, that's kind of how, like, we have, you know, these canine units, and now they're with us. We've been using them. There hasn't been tons of changes. There's different reforms in different states and cities on how the dogs are used, but the training, though, of these dogs is intense. It's very intense. So the handlers go through long processes of training to ensure they'll train the dog to the best of ability. The police officer who wants to be transferred to a canine unit or is expected to be transferred has to have years of experience as a patrol officer. And then they work with the dog on the obey commands and stuff. And so the idea is that the handler has complete control over the dog without any hesitation.
Right.
But like, as we'll look at some readings that I've done, that's obviously not always the case.
So going back, you know, I'll talk about the early implementation of these canine programs, and they seem to be very military based, not so much police based, but talking about police dogs and Jack the Ripper, a lot of the policing techniques we tried to use to solve that case are still being used. So a lot of forensic science, blood work, fingerprinting, all of that. A lot of that came out of this case. So that case was quite revolutionary in a way. But going into what happens when, what other policing, you know, police dogs may have been used. I think dogs have been used as tracking, in tracking purposes for a long time. If you think about it, a lot of the hunting dog breeds are used to track animals. They know what an animal smells like and they will chase it down. So you can see the adapting that skill set for tracking people, or whether it's missing people or whether it's like convicts or something like that. So I think dogs were probably used before that. That might be the first record of police dogs, but first record that we, you know, I think Western civilization or history has a bias towards European history because they consider it better documented.
Yeah.
So, but I do think a lot of other countries also use dogs for this police work. And we know in the South, dogs were used to track slaves. So if you want to think about those slave patrols, which were really the predecessors of modern police in the South, they were using dogs to track runaway slaves. So that's, you know, disheartening to hear. But, you know, we know that dogs have a long history with police enforcement, even if that's really the first official record.
Oh, no, absolutely. And, like, mm-hmm. they're used in jails and prisons to break up large-scale fights among prisoners. So I'm assuming, though... Okay, question for you. I just tried to play fetch with our dog and have him bring back the ball. And everything we are learning about dogs, or at least I have through this research, I am just so amazed at the things that they can do. So why can't Baloo just bring back the damn ball? What is like the asset that Baloo has that I am not queuing in on right now?
So I think he does bring the ball back for a treat. So he's not working for free. He's a he's like, he wants to be paid. He wants his pension, in treats, preferably.
Smart dog.
What I think happens oftentimes, dogs have the instinct to chase. So they have the instinct to chase the ball, but you have to train them to bring it back.
Well, that's what I was going to kind of ask you, is I was thinking about this, is maybe it's, like, what is it easier to train a dog to do, or is it really left up to the breeds? Because it seems like maybe training a dog to attack is pretty easy, where the other kind of trainings take more... rewards, more, you know, like patience for the dog.
Teaching a dog to attack is actually really hard.
Okay.
You need a special kind of dog that has that innate aggression built into it. And not a lot of dogs cannot do it. A lot of German Shepherds and Belgian Malinois end up failing the police training because they can't be aggressive enough. And a lot of times these dogs get rehomed as pets, and they are the kind of German Shepherds or Malinois that would make great pets because they lack that aggression. So that's something to keep in mind. The other thing too is we've bred out aggression from dogs. So dogs have different kinds of aggression, right? So they'll have, you know, hunting dogs are bred to have more aggression towards other animals. Some pit bull type of dogs, bulldogs and boxers, were bred to have aggression against other dogs.
Is that kind of why, like, we talked about before, Vic, and that whole scheme or the whole network of dog fighting, they're all pit bulls, right?
Those tend to be the dogs of choice for dog fighters in America, or variants of the pit bull. Is it because
they're kind of how their aggression...
It varies dog by dog, so it's hard to generalize by breed as much as, you know, some of these dogs were bred with that aggression. So they were bred to have this to be dog fighters. So a lot of pit bulls are very sweet dogs, and most of them are actually really sweet dogs, and they lack human aggression. So they will be reactive towards other dogs, but very rarely will a pit bull turn on a person. Although there are the most common dogs that bite people, and I think that's just a large number of pit bulls and large number of probably untrained pit bulls unsocialized pit bulls, but generally they're not very aggressive towards people, or at least not aggressive towards their own people.
Yeah, and so before I kind of get in, I'm going to read some articles and research that I did that sounds mostly negative about police dogs, probably for a good reason, but I should mention, like Vishal is saying, and from there, what I've read, that their police dogs do good things. They do good things.
So can we talk about the types of
dogs? About the types. Yeah. So the sniffer dogs that you see at the airport or sniffing for drugs, right? I learned, you can add on to anything that I say, but basically they're trained to sniff for a toy that kind of smells like the drugs that have trained them, the toy to smell like.
Right.
So they're very just kind of, when they they're put the vest on them or whatever,
they're not in aggression mode.
Yeah, they're just in sniff mode. And that's what you see them kind of pacing back and forth in an airport, because they know they're working.
Right.
They're searching for that thing. So that's kind of what I know about that type of dog. Did you want to talk about any of the other types of dogs?
Yeah, one thing about sniffing dogs too is they're not just trained to smell drugs and bombs or in a war scenario. We've also trained dogs to smell diseases. So they've trained dogs to sniff out COVID with 95% accuracy, which is...
Where's this research coming from?
Yeah, that's some really interesting stuff. I just read an article I read the other day, and they've been training dogs.
It wasn't on Reddit, right?
Just checking. They've also trained dogs to sniff out cancers. So these, dogs can do some pretty amazing things. Obviously, it's not 100% accurate. They estimated about 95% accuracy, so that is pretty good for detecting COVID, especially given, it took us a while to come up with a test that was 95% accurate. And the main types of, when they're usually, because they're looking for their toy, oftentimes they think they may have a toy, but they don't. So whenever, a lot of times when it's a failure, it's a false positive. So they will detect what they're looking for when it's not there. So, for example, if they're looking for drugs, they may smell...
But that's a bad thing.
Yeah, and that's a bad thing because they're giving a false positive. So, the dog is saying there's drugs there, but there really aren't drugs there. So that's oftentimes the most common type of failure. And that is kind of the issue too, where, and sometimes you'll see, the police officers like, oh, the dog smells drugs, but we can't find them.
That was like in the documentary... The Madeleine McCann documentary, where, remember, they never found the person that kidnapped her. Remember, we watched that documentary? Right. And they were trying to say it was the family at first, because the sniffing dogs were sniffing towards...
They found a cadaver, and there was a cadaver dog, and there was another dog.
They were like sniffing the, the car of the McCann. So then police were starting to think they were a suspect because of this, even though it might have been a false positive.
It's possible. There's a 1 in 20 chance that it was a false positive. So it happens often enough where you can't assume every time a dog smells something that they're finding what they're looking for, but they have a pretty good success rate. I guess dogs have an optimism bias like we do, right?
That's pretty interesting. And so that's kind of what I also want to say is, when I was doing reading, I didn't find as much, but we like to focus on the negative, but there are positives that dogs do in law enforcement, sniffing out bombs. I don't know about the drug thing, because we have enough issues with drugs being illegal, but
I think they should give away those drug dogs to stoners who lose their weed. It's like, hey man, where's my weed? And then your drug dog just goes finds it for you. It's like, under the bed, dad.
Yeah.
That would be like a great second life for those dogs.
Yeah, and for all the people they've incarcerated for this, for fucking weed fines having a little bit of weed on them. But I did find, there was one story that I was really touched by, where a dog, his first day on the job with his handler, and his handler tells the story that they were able to track down a girl who was attempting to commit suicide. She had left a note. I think this was in Connecticut. And taken a bunch of drugs and wandered off in the woods, and the dog like tracked her down and was able to lead them right to her. So of course, like, we know, and even in World War One, well, not in even, dogs are like,
they're heroes.
Yeah, and just they bring like hope, and not hope, what am I trying to say, companionship and and
camaraderie,
yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
They have found that using dogs puts people in a really good mood. So there was a study where these researchers placed a bunch of wallets of the same person's ID, and in there they had either a baby's picture, a dog's picture, or no picture, and they wanted to see how many of these people returned these wallets. That's a great study, because I performed that study naturally. I lose my wallet so many times over the course of a year. Anyways, so this study, what they found, that when you had a baby or a dog's picture in your wallet, you were more likely to get your wallet returned.
Oh, I bet dogs number one, though.
And I think it was really close between babies and dogs. I can't remember which
in
one
Seattle,
was
in Seattle,
but
if you have a picture of a baby, people just throw that wallet back on the street.
But yeah, it was really interesting, because, you know, it shows evolutionary that we have, you know, evolved dogs to be like little kids, right? And we've also bred them to have more infantile traits. So floppy ears and that whining sound that dogs make that wolves don't make, or adult wolves don't make, these are adolescent sounds for wolves. So we bred that childlike property.
See, that's so creepy to me, because America's already, and the world probably too, is obsessed with like youth culture.
Well, it's
but that's
also
a whole other topic.
Right. It's also because then as an adolescent dog or wolf was less likely to attack you than a grown wolf.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So dogs really do bring out the best in us. And there was a really interesting study a few years ago, I remember reading up on, where they were dogs that were prisoners that were essentially in a program, and they were a rehabilitation type program within a prison. So they were teaching them skills, and one of the skills was dog training. So they're teaching prisoners dog training, and these were rescue dogs. So it was kind of a win-win, where the prisoners got to interact with rescue dogs and the rescue dogs got some human interaction. And what they found, that the prisoners who worked with dogs had really much more positive outcomes in terms of their, you know, behavioral and they're just, in general, they were much more likely to be reformed. So I really do think dogs bring out the best in us.
That's awesome. Yeah. So let's transition to something darker. I found this article that I really liked about the risks that are taken when using police dogs, because there is a risk. So these are animals who cannot always make...
These are the attack dogs that are not sniffing dogs, right?
Well, not... No. I mean, like, all animals can't make judgment calls like humans can.
Right.
So when they're trained to attack, there's always going to be a risk.
But we were talking about sniffing dogs earlier.
Yeah.
Now,
so now
we're talking about dual-purpose dogs, which we didn't really get into.
Okay, so do you want to explain to our listeners, what's a dual-purpose
dog? Yeah, so a dual-purpose dog is a dog that can sniff things and also attack people, or attack a suspect. So, and they're trained to attack in a way. What's really interesting about dogs, the dogs are the only domesticated animal where you can point at someone or something and the dog will look in that direction. So that's how we've kind of trained dogs, their aggression, to be able to channel it and point it at someone and have them attack. So that police dogs, most often than not, when you see a canine unit, they are attack dogs. If you see a dog in the TSA, it's probably just a sniff dog.
Yeah, that's what I kind of figured. So that's, but like the potential to do harm to someone and even kill someone is there when you use a dog in a canine unit.
Absolutely.
As an attack dog, right? So this article that I found from the Washington Post, it's called Illusion of Control, and it begins by talking about these brutal police dog attacks that were captured on video, which I'm not going to go through all the stories of those. But even the article, the title of the article, made me think of that douchebag, the Tiger King. Remember that show
Oh,
that
gosh.
Was like all the rage?
Which is, I think what upsets me about that show is, well, I think the show did a good job of calling out how we don't need to keep these animals in captivity, but dogs and other domesticated animals are so amazing. Why would you go out of your way to have such a dangerous animal? I just don't get it.
Well, yeah, and like, I mean, they're exotic animals and they could really kill. Since one of the handlers got his, in the show at least, got his arm, you know, chewed off.
Her arm, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But like, the idea that you built this relationship with this animal and somehow have this control over it is an illusion, can be an illusion at times for handlers. And so that you're taking a risk. And so I'm going to
If you're asking them to act against their instincts, right?
Yeah, right.
So the tigers aren't used to having human handlers. They didn't evolve to have that. Same with dogs. If they're like attacking something, they've evolved to hunt prey. So, you know, and wolves would hunt elks and deer, which are many times larger than them. So they are going all in when they're in attack mode.
Well, yeah. But there's a story. I mean, there's a story of a police officer having to shoot his own dog that attacked him when on duty. So the dog thought that he was going to go after someone and instead ended up going after, when let loose, going after the handler for some reason. Or another police officer. And the handler had to shoot him. So, you know, like as much as you train, like you were saying, that dog probably thought he was in work mode and something set him off. But this, either way, I'm going to read you excerpts of this illusion of control because it has actual experts talking about this idea that people have about how much control they have. And in canine court cases, dogs are often referred to as officers because they have this whole like fake swearing in sometimes in some units of the dog as an officer. And in some states, it's actually a crime to hurt a police dog. Right. So you can even get sentenced for that. One guy I read got an extra 5 years because he knifed the police dog when he was being attacked by it. And that's like just like one story of many.
You know, I love how attacking a police dog is against the law, which I think attacking any dog should be, right? But if I was being attacked by a police dog, I would fight back. I'm going to try to defend myself. But yet you have these stand your ground laws in these countries. These states. And that's kind of pathetic, you know. Well, you could say you're standing your ground while a police dog attacked you.
Yeah. I didn't read anything about that. But yeah. So Richard Polsky, who holds a doctorate in animal behavior, and he has served as an expert witness in many canine court cases, writes that, you know, dogs don't have the ability, like I was saying, to make judgment calls like their human counterparts. So often what they find is that they'll bite without releasing, even after repeated orders to do so, and sometimes bite the wrong person. So their handlers, he said, often cannot manage them. These dogs are already genetically programmed for aggression, and then they put them through attack training, Polsky said. They can't be controlled. Charlie Melslow, a former canine handler and professor at Northern Michigan University, said that this lack of control is evident in types of tools now sold to canine officers, including a breaker bar, said officers use on the lowdown. The metal bar is slipped between the dog's teeth by the canine handler, one supply company says on its website, because many dogs will refuse to out off the suspect, meaning they won't release.
Oh.
Right? So in this day and age when everything is videotaped and uploaded to social media, the non-compliance of the dog to release on command can cause problems in courtroom and with administration.
You're acting them to act against their instincts, which is why it's so hard, right? So that's, you know, once a dog bites, they're not going to let go easily.
Yeah, and so this goes on to say, the force of a canine bite can be as much as 1,500 pounds per square inch, three times as powerful as the jaws of an untrained dog of similar size, experts say. German Shepherds and Belgian Malinois are the most common canine breeds, weighing 70 to 90 pounds. They are trained to bite with the full mouth using all of their teeth. And an estimated 40,000 people were treated for canine attacks, so by police dogs, in hospital emergency rooms from 2009 to 2018, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Although deaths are rare, the nonprofit Marshall Project, where if you're interested in looking further about this into researching canine units, the Marshall Project is a great nonprofit to get your research from. So this news organization found at least three people had died of injuries from police dog bites since 2011. And another article...
feels like it's a lot more.
It's a lot more, actually. Yeah. And I read that Indianapolis, it's crazy how many dog bites they have. Like, there's a whole case study on them because for some reason, I don't know if it was 5 times or 200 times more. I know that's a big range. Yeah. But look it up. They have... I mean, like, they are basically... their idea is paying compliance. Like, we're using the dogs however we want to get compliance from a suspect, which is awful.
Well, Indiana is kind of, you know, police departments take good old-fashioned Southern racism and combine it with passive-aggressive Midwest racism. So they get a new kind of hybrid racism, which they use on their with their hybrid attack dogs on people. So, no, it's... I don't know the specifics of Indiana, but just talking about how powerful these dogs can be. If you know, dogs that are about the size of German Shepherds, or wolves that are the size of German Shepherds, will take down much larger animals. So they really can do a lot of damage. If a dog wants to, it can rip your flesh out without any problem. Like a dog that size. And there have been dogs as small as French Bulldogs that have killed people.
Yeah, so, I mean,
they're powerful animals.
It is insane. Like, you can see pictures of dog wounds, and you're just like, did this person just go to battle?
Right.
And like, you brought this up, but this article brings it up again, which I think is important to think about, that obviously we talked about, you know, no matter what, these police departments thinking that using a dog in order to make a suspect compliant has, I feel like, is completely faulty, because the idea that you're being attacked by a dog and you're just going to lay there and let the dog bite you is insane. You're going to push, you're going to scream. If you have a weapon on you, you're going to fight it off, because you're fighting for your life, or you think you're fighting for your life.
Exactly. Any human being, that should be the normal expected reaction. You're going to fight back.
Yeah. And so it says in this article, humans are, like what we're saying already, humans are hardwired to actively fight an attack that might lead to serious injuries or death. And again, going back to kind of the civil rights era and before, it says many black suspects also have frightening personal histories of ancestors being hunted by canines.
Exactly.
Enslaved people who fled plantations were tracked down and mauled by dogs, sometimes to death. Their bodies brought back as a warning to other enslaved people. And canines were also routinely used in the 1960s on civil rights protesters, which we have haunting pictures of, obviously, from that era. So
well, dogs and other domesticated animals have always been used as tools of intimidation. You know, if you think about, even in terms of, even if you take out the whole police dog aspect of it, the concept of owning a guard dog, owning a large dog is expensive, you know, and especially it was probably more expensive relatively 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 1,000 years ago than it is today. So owning a big dog is a status symbol, for one, and then two, it is an intimidation factor. It's like, hey, if you come to my house, my big dog's gonna attack you, you know. Or it's kind of, you know, and it is a class type thing. So I think guard dogs have always had that, and you see a reinforcement of that through the police forces, right? So where these dogs are attack dogs, but they are kind of using dogs as an intimidation factor. Genghis Khan, you know, so speaking of other animals as intimidation factors, Genghis Khan would often have more horses than people. So oftentimes he would put supplies on the horses to make it look like he had more more soldiers, more cavalry than
that
people.
So
that was a pretty genius way of intimidating your opponents into thinking you had more horse fighters than you did. You know, they've also been historically, people have used elephants as tools of intimidation in war. You know, camels, any large mammals. So, and then, you know, horses, what's also really crazy about it, like if you're being approached by a person, If you're walking and someone approaches you on horseback, it is a very intimidating feeling. And I think that's probably why even in modern police forces we use horses today. So I think horses and dogs, both the animals that police forces use, are used as an intimidation tactic.
Yeah, and so like in this other article from the Marshall Project that I read, it shows, and even in Seattle, but this idea of using pain compliance, so it's a catch-all term for the methods that police officers use to get a suspect under control. So the idea is to apply quick, targeted amounts of pain, digging a thumb into a sensitive pressure point, twisting a wrist, stunning with a taser to force a person to follow
is
orders.
Is that torture?
Yeah, that's torture. I mean, I was just going to say, this is what teachers used to do to their students to get an immediate response, right? So that's like kind of the idea. And these canine units use that in different ways. And like we said, I mean, I think you talked about this when we did our previous recording, but like on the federal level, you know, we don't have kind of any federal oversight. It's like state by state, city by city on how we use these dogs. So that's where you have kind of these cases of people being attacked, and I'll read you a case of a man being killed by a police dog. So, but this one, I'll just kind of, cause this is takes place in Seattle in 2016. Cool. So in the city of Tukwila, which is just south of Seattle, if you're not from Seattle, the city had to pay $100,000, which I don't think is that much, after a police officer sicked a dog onto a man. So his alleged offense was dancing and yelling while trespassing in a freight yard. The man was on the ground with officers on top of him when the dog was released to bite his legs and buttocks, according to a dash cam video and court records that happened. So the lawsuit argued that the city's policy of using bite dogs for pain compliance violated the U.S. Constitution's ban on excessive force. So in that way, they were using excessive force in that, right? So it says the technique goes away and then the pain goes away, said Joe Schaefer, the lawyer who represented the Tukwila bite victim. I don't think there's any world in which canines can be considered to be pain compliance.
Well, I don't even know where to begin with that one. That's just
well,
awful.
Then listen to this one. So in December 2018, this is again in Seattle, and these sound like homeless people, honestly, yeah. Right? Three officers responded to a call. Well, this is a homeless man, sorry. Throwing rocks at a window. So a homeless man was throwing rocks at a window at office building south of downtown Seattle.
Didn't we talk about this in one of the last episodes?
Yeah, yeah. Or, and you were like, oh, that's every Saturday night, right? Which is kind of true. They tried to handcuff the 26-year-old who was not armed, but he pulled away, according to a police summary. They wrestled him to the ground. One officer punched him in the side four times, according to the Seattle Office of Police Accountability's report. Another kneed him, and that's when the third officer released his dog. For 37 seconds, which is a long time in dog biting, the dog chewed on the man's legs, buttocks.
The dog is shaking his head while he's doing it.
Yeah.
So not only is he biting into the flesh, he's ripping the flesh out of the body.
Yep, and then, of course, there was body cam footage of the officers high-fiving themselves after watching what the dog did. The police department didn't release the video, citing a backlog in processing public records requests, so that was in 2018. Investigators found the handler violated department policy by using the dog. The handler told them that the bite gave the man something to think of and deal with so the officers could handcuff him, which I think is what the officers probably used him for, used the dog for, sorry. And he also used his dog for pain compliance hundreds of times. So this officer had a history of using this dog for that kind of compliant.
Dogs will pick up on your emotional energy, you know, and if the dog's handler is a psycho, the dog's going to be a psycho. Because, like you said, they follow our lead and they will, you know, lead the way. And this person sounds like an awful human being who should not have ever been a police officer, right? It is an incredibly difficult job. You're dealing with people that may potentially be armed. at all times. You're dealing with people at the worst situation they'll ever be in their lives. You know, you have to show compassion and respect to human beings that are, you know, 1 second at your throat, and the second next moment you have to make sure you're restraining them without hurting them. So it takes a special kind of person to be a police officer. That person, the handler, does not seem
well, yeah, to be a cop. And I mean, and, I think,
or a handler.
I think that they also banned after this idea that of using dogs for pain compliance. Even though they're still used in Seattle.
We should not use pain compliance for anything. That's torture. That's, and why do we need pain compliance with civilians? Shouldn't you like have a lawyer before you comply to anything? And
well, this is kind of what Chuck Wexler, an executive director of the Police Executive Research Forum, talked about. But, and he said, you know, the country's 18,000 police agencies need national standards. He said police have struggled to find the most humane ways to arrest people who resist, but biting them with a dog should not be an option outside of extreme circumstances, like dealing with someone armed with a gun. What's different here is that with a canine, you're actually going beyond anything else in some ways, because the bite is creating an injury, he said. So balancing officers' need to take people into custody while answering public concerns about the use of force is a thorny issue for departments reviewing their tactics. A certain segment of the population have been conditioned to believe that all force is wrong, said, okay, so this guy is kind of a douchebag. This guy is Yakima police chief, who is like, the whole population thinks that any kind of force is wrong. Well, that's not necessarily true, but then he says, people who choose to commit criminal acts, a lot of them aren't compliant. If society expects us to maintain order, then we have to, on lots of occasions, use force. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with this, but from the research I've seen, sometimes these suspects are not armed. They're not even really doing anything, and the dog is released. That shouldn't be able to happen. And I don't think that necessarily we should be using these dogs as a force, right? Like, you can't you tase someone from further away or something? I don't know.
So I think here is a classic situation of police departments being misusing military equipment, right? So this is a dog in this situation, but we've known of police departments having like Humvees and tanks and like essentially the defense industry complex. You know, we've run out of armies of militaries to sell equipment to, so now we're selling them to the police now.
Well, let me tell you, the reason this officer, or sorry, police chief is commenting is because in Yakima, what happened was there was a man outside a grocery store parking lot who was behaving kind of erratically, maybe saying curse words. So a trooper first pulled out his gun and his taser, but didn't use anything. And then two bystanders tried to tackle the man who fell to the ground. And then what happened is a police officer showed up with his patrol dog, and he yelled out warnings to this man was over 50 years old. And passerbys were saying on the video, like, he can't speak English. He can't speak English. He doesn't. So he's telling the man to comply, or, and the people by are like, he can't speak English, right? They tried to shout out warnings to the man in Spanish, but the dog was already like let loose and attacked the man. And then officers were able to handcuff him, and he was booked, right, and sent to the hospital for treatment because his charges were, you know, it was just hard. I mean, I don't know what happened with his case, but the whole point was in this article, I mean, it wasn't kind of saying either side was bad, but it was just showing the fact that here, you know, sometimes people aren't complying because when they're faced with a dog or anyone who's attacking them, they often can't hear. They're just looking to defend themselves, right? This man couldn't speak English, right? So you're not going to be thinking in your head, oh, I need to put my hands in the air, or I need to get flat on my face, or whatever the commands of the police officer. Your adrenaline's already high enough, right, without a dog.
For not complying that don't involve someone just being deliberately belligerent.
Yeah.
So, no, I agree. And I think even if someone is belligerent, you know, they are at their worst in their, you know, police officers need to be the professionals in the situation, right? They can't resort to the same level of violence and behavior that, say, one of these suspects may do, so.
Yeah. So this is the last story I'm going to end with, which is obviously super sad, but this isn't the only story. So if you do research about victims of police dogs, you'll find other deaths. But this one is particularly sad, and it takes place in Alabama.
Of course.
Right?
Sweet home Alabama.
Yeah, it's not that sweet in this article, but the family filed a lawsuit after their son was mauled to death by a police dog in 2018, so it wasn't that long ago. He was a black man, so I'll read you this story. So the family of Joseph Lee Pettaway is fighting back after he was mauled to death by a police dog in 2018 in Montgomery, Alabama. According to new filings, in an ongoing lawsuit, the man's family has subpoenaed the body cam footage of the incident. The Montgomery Police Department previously refused to confirm that the footage of the last moments of Pettaway's life existed. They just, like, didn't want to show it. The subpoena is part of the lawsuit that the family filed in 2019 following Pettaway's killing in 2018. So according to court documents obtained by the local newspaper, the man, who was 51 at the time, was at a house that his 87-year-old mother owned in Montgomery on July 8th, 2018. The man had been looking after his mom and helping her fix up her home and was given the key and allowed to sleep there. Someone saw him entering the vacant house.
A Karen.
It's hard to, like, judge, right? Because, yeah, it could have been, like, some racist a-hole, or it could have been a neighbor who was making a bad call. But that's not the point, right? So if someone calls the police, the police shouldn't automatically, especially if it's just someone entering a vacant house.
Right.
I mean, I get it. They're always supposed to be on this heightened alert. I mean, that's how they're trained, that someone could have a gun. But
as a person who has had cops called on them for no reason before, as a brown guy, what I will say is people need to stop fucking calling the police.
Right.
Like, unless, you know, even if you have a gun to your face, just talk your way out of the situation and then go to the police.
If you have a gun to your face, not calling the police anyways.
Right.
But let me finish up here. So someone saw him entering the vacant house, like I said, and called the police to report him as an intruder. Police officer Nicholas Barber arrived at the scene with his canine dog, Nico. The dog searched the premises and ran inside toward Pettaway and lunged at him. The man was attacked by the dog, and the canine handler failed to stop.
Wow.
The canine and stood by for 2 minutes as it mauled the man before intervening. According to the court documents, the dog tore an artery in the man's groin, causing him to bleed out, and later died from the wounds at a hospital. Yvonne Pettaway Frazier said her brother was left brutally bitten on the pavement, and his blood covered the pavement outside the home. I saw it with my own eyes. His flesh was all over the ground that morning, she told the Montgomery Advertiser.
So sad.
Yeah. The family is now arguing for a portion of the body cam footage. I can't say body cam today. Of the attack to be publicly entered into evidence, fighting the confidential designation of the video. The family attorneys filed a timeline of portion of the footage. According to the document, multiple police officers failed to provide any first aid to Pettaway after he was attacked. Despite Mr. Pettaway's obvious and profuse bleeding and his apparently going into shock, no policeman examines or evaluates Pettaway's wound, and no policeman administers any of the most basic, essential, obvious, and immediately required care to stem or reduce his bleeding, the lawsuit documents say. The document also alleges that the officer carried him to the pavement outside of the house, standing around him as he bled. The dog handler joked with the other officers and took cell phone photos of Pettaway before moving him outside. As officers appeared to wait for the EMS personnel to arrive, according to the documents, another officer asked Barber if Pettaway got a bite, and Barber allegedly replied, "Fuck yeah." Lizzie Mae Pettaway, the victim's mother, is also demanding justice for her son's murder. Go freaking Lizzie. She's at 87 trying to demand justice for her son. They stood up there and let the dog kill him, she said. They need to pay for what they did. If someone had killed the dog, they'd made him pay for it, which is true.
Exactly
from,
what we
right?
talked about, right?
They stand out there and hold a conversation after letting the dog chew him like a piece of meat, watching him bleed to death. A federal judge has scheduled an October hearing on the matter.
Yeah, so it sounds like these cops don't really know how to use a dog. And even if they did, these dogs are unpredictable, right? I don't know how I feel about having these dogs in the police force. And I honestly can't see any reasons why we should have police dogs be set upon civilians.
Well, so in conclusion here, do you think police dogs are a good intervention tool? And if so, what for?
We're limiting this conversation to attack dogs, right?
Well, yeah, but you could comment on other dogs for sure.
I think sniffing dogs absolutely make a lot of sense. And, recovery dogs, they're not in aggression mode, and they shouldn't attack when they find someone. So you can have a sniffing dog that's a very friendly dog. And I'm all for that. As far as attack dogs go, I think it makes sense in the military to have an attack dog. You're potentially fighting other armed combatants, and it's kind of no war is a level playing field, but in a way, you're fighting other people that are armed, and they may have their own guns and their own dogs. And the thought is, I love dogs, but, if I had to choose between a dog life and a human life, and if having a military dog potentially saves human lives, that makes sense to do it if we can prove so. As far as police dogs, I don't even know if I believe in the police. I don't even know we should have human police officers. I think we should, right? But it's the whole abolish the police thing is kind of interesting. Maybe we should abolish the police and then replace the police with the Karen mafia. And they can have their own attack dogs, but, I think what we'll do is instead of having one 90-pound German Shepherd, you'd have the same weight of Chihuahuas. So you'd get 13 Chihuahuas. Pull out of your Prada bag, the Karen Mafia pulls out like 13 Chihuahuas.
I think I see the through line of these episodes with you. If we don't mention Karen, at least two times, then the show is not a success.
Well, I feel like we should just do an episode on Karen.
We need to do, I think you really need an episode. It can be like your therapy to deal with all this,
I've been dealing
turmoil
with Karens all my life.
I know, and every day at the dog park for sure.
Yeah, and little Chihuahuas would be harder to shoot, and then their bites won't kill anyone.
Okay.
I'm just saying, rescue Chihuahuas and have them as attack dogs.
For sure. Well, I am against attack dogs in any kind of way, especially this day and age. I really don't feel like they're necessary, and we have other intervention tools that we could use besides putting the animal or a suspect, since they're a suspect at that point and not they have not been through the criminal system, through potential harm or danger. I do believe that humans also can be reformed. So the idea of attacking them and creating more trauma is not okay, or doesn't sit well with me. But I do understand the use of dogs for the other things, the good things, right? And I'm not even this huge dog person to the level or animal rights person as most people are. But I definitely feel like there's something off when you see pictures of police dogs being used against everyday citizens. We've seen that before. Right.
And the dogs are abused, too.
And yeah,
the police are using them to abuse people.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't seem like a good use of dogs, and doesn't seem like a good policing technique. The question is, how do you restrain people? And, is it less likely to hurt
de-escalate
someone?
De-escalate and
yeah.
then, yeah,
Is it less likely to hurt someone by either having to release a set of dog upon them or by shooting them? And
I honestly don't know, but I still think both those things.
Well, yeah, and that's what the people who are for police dogs, even these police chiefs, what I read, I mean, their argument to me is too simplified because everything is complex, but it's basically like, oh, well, by using the dogs, we take away the potential of shooting the suspect because here's one more thing where the suspect has to deal with this dog on them. Right. But as I've also read, when the suspect tries to defend itself by maybe even killing the dog, which is not great, sometimes they get shot. So in the end, we're not really solving a whole lot of the problems here by just simplifying it and saying, this is, you know, it's better than not being shot at, right? Mm-hmm. Well, duh, that's like a very elementary school argument, so maybe they need to take my classes. But anyways, we should probably end there. This has been a very interesting conversation. I learned a lot, so thank you so much, Vishal. I hope we don't have to record this again.
I hope so, too. And maybe instead of attack dogs, the police can just get really shady cats.
Shady cats are even scarier, man. This woman was yelling at me on a bike when this cat was like kind of teasing Blue, and she's like, I would stay away from that kitty. And I'm like, hello, lady, I'm going to do the same thing. You think I'm going to let this dog or this cat attack my dog? But thank you to everyone for listening to Lens Fuzz. If you'd like to comment on this story, feel free to email me at brookoffice@gmail.com or write corrections or questions, story ideas. Follow me on Twitter, or I should say LensFuzz on Twitter. Instagram, there's like hardly anyone there. But yeah, follow Twitter and Instagram for new stories coming out. And until next time, thanks. This is LensFuzz. Bye.
Bye.